Hello world, this is Stephen Francis, and you're listening to the Humble and Honest Podcast. Today's episode, I'm joined with Tanya Harold. Tanya is a New England native, like myself, and co-pastors Refuge Church in Windham, Maine, along with her husband, Adam. Refuge Church mission is to show people that when they make Jesus their refuge, they never have to be overtaken by the storms of life. I talk with Tanya about being a woman in ministry, leading with her husband, and also all she's dealing with as a pastor in the midst of this coronavirus crisis. Hear for yourself now, my conversation with Tanya Harold. Tanya Harold, so good to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, absolutely. It's great. You know, Tanya, I know that you are someone on ARC. That's actually how I found out about you, because you were one of the featurettes in the ARC video at Grow. Do you go to Grow, by the way?
So Grow, we haven't been to the ARC conferences, the Relate conferences, especially like winter is our conference season. So that's the bummer about this virus. We've seriously put a halt on some of our conferences, but I haven't been to Grow, no.
Oh, okay. You should definitely go when you get the chance. It does make sense, though, that you would choose the winter conferences to go to, seeing how you live in Maine, and I'm sure that's a big break from the Northeast weather. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the first thing I do want to know is if you could tell us your story. I mean, where did you begin? How did you end up doing ministry in Maine specifically? Which is very interesting for me because I'm a New Englander. I've never been to Maine, though. I've never been that far north. So I'm very curious what brought you there.
Yeah, so I'm actually from Boston originally. So New England is my home. It's always had my heart.
How difficult is it that in the midst of all this coronavirus, we also have to hear that Tom Brady is leaving us?
That was just like, you got to kick people when they're down. That was dirty. Yeah.
Anyway, back.
Right. Yeah. So I married a guy from the Midwest. We met in Bible college in Boston. And my husband, Adam, is from kind of all over the Midwest. So a lot of our ministry years after we got married was in the Midwest. We were worked in several different churches, but always as a youth pastor. So in 2016, we knew that, or 2015, we knew that God was kind of, it was time, you know, certain things had just lined up, and we knew that our always maybe someday dream to plant a church was now. And so he resigned from the church that we were working at. We kind of just stepped out in faith. I'm also a registered nurse. So I was working as a nurse at the time and just kind of floated us for a couple months in between him stopping at the church and us actually moving from Illinois. My parents still lived in Boston at the time. So what we did was move from Illinois to Boston, because that was easier to find housing up in Maine. And so we always knew that we were going to church plant in New England. And I can get into that a little bit more about why New England is so important besides just having my heart. But we started looking for housing, lived with my parents. We thought it was going to be a short-term thing, which, you know, you make plans and God laughs. So we ended up staying with my parents for a couple months and moved to Maine in June of 2016. We already had our launch day for the church was already scheduled for September. So we were kind of in a crunch. We're what you call a parachute launch. So we knew nobody and just kind of dropped into this town. We were thinking downtown Portland. God kept directing us in another direction. So we're right outside of Portland. We're in a town called Windham. And we started meeting people through our kids' sports. We kind of used them as just some toss them out into the community and make some friends that way. And we've really started to build a network of friends and our launch team. And we were getting really close to that September date. And we knew that it wasn't going to be the healthiest version of a team, you know, that whole 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And so if we didn't have a good, healthy team size, we knew that we would quickly burn people out. So we decided to push our launch date back. And in that time, our team size more than doubled of just being faithful. So being obedient to God, just praying through that season. So from September to March is when we pushed our launch, and we launched March 5th, 2017. And thank you. Yeah, we're still a baby. We're kind of that toddler now, learning to walk and just getting our feet under us. So it's been a wild ride, but Maine is New England, so it's home for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm from Connecticut, so I'm very South New Englander. But
it still counts.
Yeah, it counts. It counts. The thing that I am curious, though, you know, you already mentioned, why was New England so important to you? And also, I'm curious, too, what are the unique challenges you have doing ministry in Maine specifically? Because not all New England is the same.
It's not. We actually do some coaching with ARC for other church planters. And every time we hear there's somebody going north, that's kind of how they designate the coaching. And I remember the first time we did coaching with them, it was a couple that was going to Nashville, Tennessee. And we're like, that's not north, but it was the most north that they had. So one of the challenges is the area that we're in. So Portland, Maine, Barna did some research, as Barna does. And in 2017, they ranked Portland, Maine, the number one most post-Christian city in the U.S. So post-Christian, they gave like 16 different criteria, anything from, I don't believe in God, I haven't attended church, I agree that faith is not important, all different criteria. And if you meet 9 of the 16, you're considered a post-Christian city. So Portland, Maine was number one in 2017. They did that same study again in 2019, and it's actually, we've dropped. We're number two. So there's some progress being made there, but Portland specifically is, it's just hurting. We're actually the first and still the only ARC church plant in Maine. So we're just, every time we coach, it's like, man, if somebody's not set on their city, I got a great city for you. Where there's zero competition. That's one of the things we love about ARC. And we just want help here. There is a lot of work to do and we need boots on the ground. So just the culture of the city is really difficult. And then Maine is cold. Winter is long. So people don't get scared if it snows. Like we, you know, we can have a few inches and we don't have to cancel church. However, once summer hits, people are gone because they've been cooped up all winter. So summer is king here. It's beautiful here in the summer, but everybody has a boat. Everybody has a camp. Everybody disappears over the weekend. So keeping people engaged through the summer is really difficult. I told my husband shortly after we moved here, I have never met anybody who vacations as much as Mainers. And so instead of taking off, you know, a full week or two during the summer, they take long weekends. So somebody is always gone for a long weekend. So they spread out their vacation days and just keep taking those Fridays and Mondays and having a lot of long weekends in the summer. So that's really difficult. And then just, you know, winter and being a portable church, that's a struggle. Stuff freezes. It's really hard to have all your electrical equipment on the trailer and keep it in good condition. Our hand soaps, we quickly learned, we, you know, switch up the hand soaps in the bathroom. Those froze solid. And there's just different things you have to navigate when it comes to the weather. But weather's fine. Weather's easy to adapt to. It's the culture and the heart of the people that we're really in a fight against right now.
Do you feel like a lot of people are more like indifferent? Like, oh, you're a Christian, whatever. Like, if that's your vibe, then, you know, do that. Or is it more like hostility?
No. Yeah.
I almost find it that people may disagree, but I almost find indifference is sometimes the more difficult thing to tackle because if you don't care, you don't care. You know what I mean? Yeah. And trying to convince someone to care sometimes takes a lot more work than to have a conversation with someone that's opposed. And maybe you might be able to have a conversation on letting them see things differently. But how do you feel it is for you in your area?
It's, I would say we're definitely fighting indifference more. It's really hard to convince somebody that they need a cure. They don't agree that they're sick. So just breaking through that. And our way that we go about that is through relationships. So we are highly relational pastors. We do friendship. We do life with our people. And so that, you know, that's sustainable for up to a certain size church. We're still in that growing phase, so it's still working. But as you grow, you need to really empower your leaders to kind of duplicate, you know, that's Jesus's model through the disciples. He didn't have relationships with the whole multitude. He had it with the disciples, with the 12, and then empowered them to go do the same. So that's what we're trying to do. But it's a long game here. You know, it's not the days of the tent revival and screaming and banging and all of that. It's doing life with people, showing them through your actions what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus. And then slowly those walls come down, especially as you walk through some difficulties with people when they go through storms in their life. That's our vision of our church is to show people that when they make Jesus their refuge, they never have to be overtaken by the storms of life. So when we have the opportunity to walk through those storms with people, we can keep pointing them to Jesus. But some of it's just waiting for those storms to come, unfortunately.
Mm, absolutely. And, speaking of storms and things of that nature, I think everyone is experiencing just the difficulty with the coronavirus. If I'm correct, you were in New York when things started turning serious, and I live in New York. So first off, how has your church responded to all of this? Mm-hmm. I know even your trip to New York, or I don't know if you were traveling different places, got cut short. But what are the ways that you guys are kind of making a difference during this time and adapting? Because I think as someone also that is operating out of a portable campus, there's a lot of things that you kind of have to figure out on the fly now that you almost took for granted. You know what I mean? The idea that, we'll just meet publicly. So how's it been for you guys?
I think we're on the same struggle bus that everybody else is. It's just being innovative for something that's unprecedented. So one of the benefits of being an ARC church planter was they give you a playbook. You run the playbook, you launch your church. Right now, everybody, there's no playbook for this. So we're all learning and, what we did last Sunday, we're going to look at metrics. We're going to evaluate how that went and then, make adjustments as necessary. One of the first things that we decided to do was to ditch the message series that we were in. And my husband is now speaking to where people are currently at. It's kind of the elephant in the room if you're not talking about it. But if you are talking about it, sometimes people get sick of it, but it's always there. So that's our job as pastors, is to go into the need. And so our messages now are just individual, speaking to the need that people have. One of the benefits of being portable is that we're used to having to do AV stuff outside of the church. So our house that we own happens to have a building on the property that is our church office. It's been our church office for a couple of years. And so we've always filmed our news segment for church service. So now we're just filming all of church. So it's actually kind of cool to see God showing us that, even in the seasons where we were becoming impatient with being portable, it's a benefit right now. We don't have a mortgage that we have to pay for a building that we're not meeting in. So we're renting a school, a high school, but if we're not using it, we're not paying for it. So our overhead is considerably lower. So there's a blessing there. So our church, besides doing Sunday service online, like everybody else is doing, we've also committed to doing daily content for our church. So every morning at 9 a.m., there's something on the church's Facebook page for people. We want to keep the kids just as engaged. So our kids team is also coming up with content that we're posting, because we don't want our kids to miss the faces of their teacher. So we're trying to meet the needs of the whole family, not just the parents.
Mm-hmm. I think that's incredible. And, please know that I've been praying for you guys and praying for the church as a whole during this time, because I think this is, it's all perspective, right? I think if you view this as like, man, this is going to be so difficult, I think you're right. But I also think, hey, this is an opportunity for the church to rise up in ways that it hasn't before. And I want to be a part of that. I think you're right about that, too. And I really appreciate what you guys have been doing so far. And the thing that I was really interested in is that, Tanya, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great ministry. You're doing a great thing in an area, like you mentioned, one of the only churches of your type in Maine. And you're also a woman at the same time in the midst of all of this. And the reason why this is a big deal, maybe some of our listeners aren't familiar, is that there can sometimes be a lot of animosity given towards women in ministry. And the thing that I'm curious about for you specifically, from the time you were in Bible college up to now, what have been unique challenges for you as a woman in ministry? Especially, if I'm correct, I believe you even preach from time to time as well. So what are the things that you've battled with in this journey?
It's funny that you had mentioned from Bible college till now. So I grew up in a really conservative Baptist background and went to a Baptist Bible college. However, I did not finish my degree there because I realized that I didn't want to be a teacher and I didn't want to be a missionary. And so there was no degree for me to have there. I went in with a youth ministry major, but I knew if I came out with a youth ministry degree, then it'd be in my circle, there'd be no job for me. I met my husband in the meantime, ended up leaving school, getting married, going back to school for nursing in a public college. So just in feeling like there's no place for you, that, you know, that was something that I struggled with for a long time. Also, I really know that the calling to be a pastor's wife is different than the calling to lead the church with your husband. So for years, as we were working in these conservative churches, being youth pastors, I was the pastor's wife, but that was never my calling. My calling has always been to use my leadership gifts to complement my husband, to serve alongside him. And so it wasn't until we launched our church that I was able to fully step into that. And it was really my husband that just kept speaking into that and giving me opportunities to step up more and more. Speaking on Sundays, the first time he asked me if I'd preach, I told him no. I shot him down. So the first Mother's Day, we did like a tag team message and just kind of got my feet wet and got comfortable with it. And then he slowly kind of released me into more and more public speaking, preaching capacities. But, you know, my background still might family, friends, sometimes I still have to have that conversation of what it looks like to be co-leading a church versus the calling of being just a pastor's wife, which that's just as anointed, just as important, but that wasn't the calling that I had on my life.
Hey world, this episode is brought to you with the help of Ambo TV. Ambo TV brings inspirational live sermons from the most captivating next generation Christian pastors, along with in-studio discussion to a broad multi-platform audience. Check out AmboTV.com and Ambo Network at Ambo Network via social media to see all the great sermons and pastors that they showcase. You'll even see me, Stephen Francis, on the platform. Now let's get back to this conversation with Tanya Harold. And I think there's a frustration too. I think of my wife so much because the church that I'm currently an associate pastor at is the church that she grew up in. And it's very interesting to see how growing up in the church, she was known as Jasmine. And now, since me being there, suddenly she's Pastor Stephen's wife. And I think sometimes that irritates me a little bit because she is also a pastor at the church. And I do believe that she, not to say we should be all about titles, but I think there is a respect for the calling that is on somebody's life. So she should be seen as not Pastor Stephen's wife. She should be seen as Pastor Jasmine. And, you know, and maybe you can speak to this as well, because I want to know for you, how do you handle those conversations? And how do you handle even some of the patriarchal, the negative things that have been put on women from the church? Because I do believe that those things do exist. I do believe also through scripture, we see that I think the gospel champions women. I mean, you know, and it's all over, and we'll talk about that more. But how do you answer those? How do you battle with that when someone might come to you with an opposing view on what you're doing?
It's the same with any opposing view. The biggest struggle with society right now is that we can disagree and still be in relationship with each other. So first laying that foundation of here's what I believe. Here's how I'm interpreting this scripture. I see some scriptures as prescriptive and some as descriptive, and also reading things in context. So doing a lot of just scripture digging for myself and encouraging them to do the same. I listen to a lot of sermons, messages, studies by people that I respect that have the same view as me, just to keep on educating myself, keep on encouraging myself. My pastor, Derek Fry in Massachusetts, he just did an amazing series on empowering women. And one of my biggest takeaways was that the family has always, the church has always spoken into the value of the mother and the father's voice in the family. But the church didn't speak into the value of the mother and father's voice in the church. And so it was always just the father's voice in the church, and they silenced the mother. But think about how much more healthy a family is when both parents have a place, both parents have a voice and lead and guide and direct the family. And so that's what the church should look like.
I absolutely agree with that. And I also feel, I do think, and maybe you can speak to this as well, I do think that there's a level of perspective that men do need to see from scripture, and not only see it for themselves from other men, but I do think we need to listen to women more as mm-hmm. well. And I think if women were preaching more, because this is why this is so interesting to me, because I grew up in a very Pentecostal environment, and I can't speak for every Pentecostal church, but in the Pentecostal circles I grew up in, women in ministry was never an issue. It was never something that I thought was a big deal. I remember going to a charismatic school. Very interesting. I was in a graduation class of six, but that's another subject. And basically, the pastor slash principal of that school was a white man, and his pastor was a black woman. And he always submitted to her authority. And just, I didn't even realize just the impact, how impactful that was until I got older. And I was like, man, that says a lot about an individual, especially as a male. But how do you believe men should be addressing this in the church? Obviously, not everybody sees it as a problem, but what are things that you and especially your husband have done in order to look at what's happening in the church and addressing this specific area of culture?
So it's great being a brand new church where within our church itself, this is just normal. We stepped into this as leading together. And so I've never had that struggle within the Refuge Church of people honoring my position, not listening to my voice as a leader. But the church, the Big C Church, we need the men. You know, unfortunately, they're not going to listen to the women saying, you need to honor my position. You need to listen. They're listening to the men. And so it's the men that we need. We need our brothers to speak out, to give us a seat at the table. And, you know, I was thinking the other day about just this dynamic of women in the church. And one of my favorite movies is Little Women. And there's a scene in the movie where they're sitting around, they're talking about women's right to vote. And she's trying to interrupt into this conversation of all men, and nobody's listening to her. And she has something so valuable to say. And so one of the men see that she wants to speak and quiets the room and gives her the opportunity to speak. And that's exactly what we need. We need men to just give us our platform and then to just encourage us to continue. This isn't a, you know, one-time show that, you know, here we go, we're going to appreciate women speaking, and so you can speak on Mother's Day. This is going to be part of the culture of the church.
That makes me so annoyed, actually. That makes me so annoyed. Anytime it's like, hey, it's Mother's Day, we're going to have a woman speaker. And that's not to say you can't have that, but it's also kind of like, wait, she's a good speaker even outside of that. And since I'm talking, I just need to say this to anybody out there that's listening and you're someone in authority. And Tanya, correct me if I'm wrong. If I hear one more pastor talk about how hot his wife is on stage, like, yeah, here's my hot wife. Yeah, she's so, that's for me. It's just kind of like, I don't. And listen, if you love your wife, that's great. But I think I like the idea of like, I respect my wife so much that I'm not going to do anything that would objectify her, especially in public like that. And I'd rather you say, hey, here's my beautiful wife. I love her. I think she's great. As opposed to, yeah, here's my hot wife. Can't wait to, you know, whatever. But
dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't know. That's just me. But
I get it. Yeah.
Have you had any time when maybe somebody didn't want you to speak, or there was some specific opportunity that you felt like, oh, my husband got it because he's a man as opposed to me getting it? Have you had to deal with that tension at all?
Thank God, no. No, not yet. And I say not yet because I would be a fool to think that it's going to be smooth sailing. So praise God, no, I haven't.
For sure. For sure.
I think a lot of it's in the circles that you run in too, you know? So maybe if I was still, you know, 10 years back in my life, it would be constant struggle bus. But the circles that we're running in right now, because this is such a topic that people are aware of, I really feel like we're making moves in the right direction as a church.
That's so great. I'm so happy for you guys doing that. And that, again, you're championing yourselves. And I really see equality in the biblical sense happening at Refuge. And I really respect that. And I think more churches need to do the same. The other thing I am curious, though, is, you know, obviously, yes, there's leading as a woman, but then there's also just leading in marriage. And sometimes there's just like there is a high calling on anyone's life that's leading as a couple. But man, I mean, the pressure of like, hey, we have to get this right. We have to be leading by example. I can imagine it can be really difficult. Yet at the same time, not to call ministry a business, but there are things that need to be handled that you have to work through. And it's very easy for the business part of it to interfere with the personal part of it. And I'm curious for you, how have you kept your marriage healthy in the midst of something like this, especially starting a church? Because, man, the level of work that has to go in can be pretty grueling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we know that Sunday is not our Sabbath. Sunday is a grind. And so it's still important to have a Sabbath. So we've chosen Mondays to be our Sabbath. And that's the time that we do nothing church. We're even holding each other accountable where if a conversation starts, that's church. We're like, shut it down. We started out by saying Fridays was going to be our day off. And it never worked. As church planners, there was always something that had to get done before Sunday. But we learned we could do it on Monday. We could celebrate the day and then take Monday off and then look back on what Sunday was on Tuesday and start making adjustments for the next week. So number one is figuring out a Sabbath and not be so tied down to the fact that Sunday was always your Sabbath. Because if you're leading a church, there's a lot of work that goes into that. And then the next thing, honestly, is therapy. My husband and I have a therapist that we meet with twice a month on Zoom. He's in Missouri. We're in Maine, so it's great. We never run into him in the grocery store. I'm not worried about trying to invite him to church, but he's a believer and he is just so encouraging to us. And I was really honestly resistant to the therapy at first. My husband started for him and then invited me to join him. And now we're both doing it together because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but you pay by the hour. You don't pay per person, at least with our therapist. So I was like, oh, I love a good deal. That's like a BOGO. So if I start going to therapy with you, couples therapy, you know, but we're so quick to see, you know, I go to the doctor for a physical to maintain health. But if you go to a therapist, people automatically assume something's wrong. And this is us just maintaining our marriage. You know, we're not like, this is a last ditch effort. We've got to go see a therapist. This is so we continue to process things. You know, you can't, when you are leadership of a church and you have a friend circle that's within the church, there's a limit on how much talk you can do. You can't turn to the people that you're shepherding and vent about the person who's making you crazy because that's somebody in the church, or maybe it's my husband and that's still their pastor and I need to honor and respect him. But if we have a therapist that I can talk to and just like, I love my husband, but I want to murder him today. Here's what's going on. It's totally safe person. So it's been such a huge help for us.
Do you feel like all pastors need therapy?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm starting to get to that point where I just feel like, man, the level of burden that sometimes you take on emotionally and spiritually, I think if you don't have a proper outlet to process those things, your longevity can really, you know, and there's exceptions to the rule. Certain people just have the ability to go long term, but that's not me.
Yeah.
And I think you need ways in order to process these things to the best of your ability.
Yeah, we believe in that so much that we actually wrote it into the benefits package of our church. So any staff that comes on, this will be a benefit to them, is that there's X amount of hours of therapy that will be provided to them. It's so important. I cannot say enough great things about therapy. I'll even give you a little bit of insight into one of our personal sessions. I was talking with an issue with our therapist and just some feelings that I was having, which if you know me at all, you know that I'm not a highly emotional person. We joke that I'm emotionally constipated, but I was just, you know, kind of starting to process some emotions with him. And I would stop myself and I'd say, but I know that God is bigger than this. And then I continue. And then I'd stop myself and say, but I know that I'm not having enough faith right now. And finally, our therapist said, how about you let me listen for sin in what you're saying? And you just continue to process your emotions. You know, I'm so used to having to preach to somebody as I'm speaking and continue to identify things in my life that maybe I'm feeling it, but it might be sinful. It might be a lack of faith. And so I'm going to continue to preach that as I'm processing something with them. But with this therapist, he was just like, just talk, stop preaching it. Stop trying to shut yourself down and just get it out. And then we can go back through together. So that was such a big, just unloading for me to be able to just put it all out there and not worry about having to like take back some of those words as I was processing something. Mm.
Hey world, I hope you're enjoying this conversation so far. I want to let you know a couple of ways that you can support the show. If you haven't already, please subscribe, share, and leave a review for the podcast so that more people get the chance to know about it. Also, you could be a contributor through Patreon. For as low as $1 a month through Patreon, you can help support this show and help continue these conversations that you're hearing today. And as a thank you for being a Patreon contributor, you will be getting 2 bonus episodes that will be available only on that platform. That's right. Patreon subscribers are getting 2 bonus episodes. Now let's get back to this conversation with Tanya Harold. Man, I think that's powerful, and I think people really need to take advantage of that for themselves. Stop preaching to yourself. And that's not to say, I think there's times you have to. The Psalms reflect that, but I think there's a difference and a time on when to do that and how. How does this work also with your children? How many children do you have?
2.
All right, 2. And how do you navigate? So you're doing ministry with your parents. You're doing ministry with your spouse, so that's already a challenge. And now you have 2 preacher's kids. And I've also seen that backfire dramatically, depending on how you interact with it. So what have been the healthy practices for you guys in regards to your children? Are they exactly the same for you as a couple? Are there any things that you do to be sure that the kids know that you are for them and prioritizing them as well?
Mm-hmm. So our kids are 12 and 14. We have a boy and a girl, and they very much from day one have had a place at the refuge. And so when we were in our pre-launch season, and we kind of made ourselves students of church. So we would visit a different church every Sunday in between the time when my husband was on staff at a church and the refuge had actually started. We're church homeless. And so we were visiting different churches. And what we told our kids was, you're going to be our spies. And so you're going to go into the kids ministry of this church and you're going to tell me everything that you loved about it and then things that you wouldn't want to do the same. And so they had ownership from day one. And we would ask them after, all right, tell me about kids. What did you think? What did you like? What did you not like? And so they were very, they owned that job. They told us everything about that. And so then when we got our church started, they had a voice in that. And even now, 3 years later, just the other day, my daughter, she's 14, she's on Instagram stories and she's posting, she's doodling things. And I was like, why am I not having you run the church's Instagram stories during the service? And so handed her my phone. Girl, you're logged in, go for it. And so she's running the IG stories on Sunday mornings and she is loving it. So just giving them a place, giving them a job. We have a junior dream team. So our middle schoolers that are too old to be down in the kids service, but might not be totally engaged in Sunday service, they are serving on the dream team. So they're helping in kids. And so my son does that. He works in our middles classroom of like our preschoolers. And he just eats that up because they think he is a stud.
That is so awesome. You know what I'm hearing? I think there's this thing that I rage against with the church. And I love the church. Obviously, I'm a pastor, but there's a lot of things that I want to see change. And one of the things that I don't like is that oftentimes there is a man with his wife and his children, and he gets to step up on stage and preach every Sunday as the format is. And it can oftentimes cause for him to prioritize more that moment, that setting, than the Monday through Saturday with his family, if you're not careful, if he's not careful. And what I'm hearing from you is that, yes, there is that Sunday when there's the speaking on the stage, but there is a level of rest, first off. There is a level of, how do you say, counseling, I guess, and accountability that's happening. And then there's also a level of ownership as well, where it's like, listen, you're not just going to sit back here and just bask in, oh, I'm the Herald's kids. It's like, no, mm-hmm. you're going to be a part of this. Like you're doing your part. You're making an impact too. And I think that level of everybody kind of working together, doing their part, and then also having those times where it's like, let's come together. Let's find rest together. Man, I can't help but feel inspired by that, in the sense of I feel like that brings so much more longevity and health into a pastoral family than not. And I also think anybody can apply that too, right? And yeah. You don't have to be a pastor specifically, but there's things that you can take and apply to your own family to be sure that everyone feels like they're involved and not just sitting on the sidelines watching, because that's sometimes where resentment can bring or can come from. I am curious for you then, in the time that we have, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that you listen to a lot of pastors with your similar theology to help you understand how to believe what you believe. Who are the people that do inspire you? And they don't have to be specifically in that category, but when you think of the church and your ministry, who are people that you look to give you fuel to keep going?
So with questions like that, I know sometimes people hear that and automatically think like, who are the big dogs that you're always listening to? And so there's a difference, I think, between who inspires you and who encourages you. And so it's really easy to come up with a list of like, who inspires me? Like, who am I reading their books and listening to their podcasts? But who encourages me is who actually speaks directly into our church and into my life and knowing specific things. And so I actually would rather speak about the people who encourage me, because it's, they honestly don't get that nod like they should, just because it's a smaller platform, but it's the most important platform for my life. And so there are our board of overseers and their wives all lead their churches with them. And so we have, I spoke earlier about Pastor Derek Fry, but his wife, Stacy, she's a pastor. She was just ordained in their church. And that was kind of the start of that whole Empowering Women series. The end of that series ended with her ordination. And so that was such an encouragement to me. And they can also turn and look at what we're doing in our church and speak directly into that. And we have friends like Emmy and Emily Vasquez in Massachusetts that are leading an amazing church called Excel Church. And, one of the most valuable things they spoke to me about was when we pushed our church launch, you know, I thought that was failure number one, but they had done the same thing and their church is booming. And they're so wise when it comes to self-care and mental health, value that so much. And, you know, their story is amazing. They're part of our Relate family. That's one of those tribes within ARC. And Emmy was actually the speaker at the Relate conference this past year. And he just, his story, personal story, he's so vulnerable with sharing it. But Emily is right there alongside him, leading the church, leading their leaders, and just, they're rock stars. So it's the people that encourage me more than the people that inspire me that help me to keep going.
Man, that's powerful. And I'm encouraged and inspired hearing those names and seeing those people. Like you mentioned, it's very easy to be like, yeah, Stephen Furtick is great. Stephen Furtick is awesome. Right. I mean, I love Stephen Furtick. Yeah. You know what I mean? Give credit to where credit is due. But yeah, those people that are talking with you, the people who you can call on, I think those are the people that we should definitely celebrate. So thank you for sharing that with me.
Yeah.
I'm curious for you, Tanya, seeing everything that you're seeing now, and I'm sure you are like me, you're having conversations with pastors and other churches, just trying to figure out how do we get through this whole coronavirus thing, which it's still crazy. At the time of this recording, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, everything was normal. And now it just feels like things are changing by the second. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we're just trying to adapt. What do you hope to see on the other end of this whole thing?
You know, New York is number one for the most concentrated, most cases. And I was so encouraged when I saw New York State earlier this week had called for nurses and doctors that had been retired to come out of retirement. And so they had 1,000 nurses and doctors respond and they're going back into the hospitals, walking right into the fire. And I thought of that in terms of the church, where we've had so many people that are just consumers of church that are kind of retired from serving their church and serving one another. But this is the time now that we need to call those people out of retirement. It was never for you to retire, but we need people to not be consumers of church, to be contributors of church. And so what that looks like right now in coronavirus days is we're not setting up pipe and drape right now, but we do need a digital street team. So we need people engaging on our videos. We need people sharing, liking, commenting, because their algorithm, you got to play the game. So the more action a video has on it, that more timelines it's going to appear in. And so we need people that just everybody can engage with a church. I hope that the church learns a lot during this season. As a pastor, you're not able to visit other churches, but right now I can go to 20 different churches on Sundays because I can watch everybody stream. And right now the playing field is pretty level, where it's not, we don't have this huge production right now. Everybody's pretty stripped down and pretty basic. And so I'm watching your worship, I'm listening to your preaching, and then maybe I'm getting some, you know, style points or just some ideas, creative ideas, but it's pretty toned down. And so if we can watch other churches with a critical eye and not a critical heart, we'll be able to learn so much. And then when we relaunch, when we get back into our buildings and are able to come together again, we can use some of the stuff that we're learning during this season and just get those people out of retirement, empower our leaders, and just get going. Because, you know, it almost has this September 11th feel where everybody's like, maybe we should be praying. Maybe we should check on our neighbors. And it's like, yeah, think about what happened in the church in those post 9/11 days of people having their guard down and being willing to have faith conversations.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm very inspired by that. This is literally the most collaborative time the church has ever been. Because pretty much everybody, you know, whatever you do, you share it with the world. And not only that, you have the opportunity to learn from somebody else. And I think we have to have that mindset. And I think, again, we just need to have faith and be proactive. But above all, you know, definitely do the work that needs to be done. So, Tanya, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a highlight of my week, and I was excited to prepare for this and talk about something other than how are we going to do Sunday. So this was great and encouraging.
Absolutely. Thank you again. Wow. A great conversation with someone who I believe to be a new friend. Hope this conversation blessed you the way that it blessed me. For more information about Tanya's church, check out refugemaine.church. Again, refugemaine.church. Again, also, please be sure to subscribe, share, and review this podcast to be sure that more people can check it out. And I want to thank all of you guys for listening, and also thank all of the Patreon contributors that are making this show possible. Hope you guys will join me again soon on the next episode of the Humble and Honest Podcast.